following was produced by Pirate Radio Studios Incorporated in Memphis, Tennessee.
Hello, my name is Rick Cheddar, and this is From Radioland. Greetings, salutations, hello, hey, how's it going? Welcome to another episode from Radioland from the home office in Memphis, Tennessee. Yes, it's springtime and it's lovely. I was just outside just a moment ago, sneezing my head off. It's all right. It's a little pollen. It'll be good. It'll all go away. It's episode 220, kids. Liz Mandeville will be on the program here in just a little while. That's gonna be. She came in all the way from Chicago to be this. She came in just to see little old me, and I couldn't be happier. I get, of course, she had other things to do. She has more important things to do than just spend time with this guy. But we were glad that she did nonetheless, and we had a fine old time, so we'll get into that here in just a little while. Artificial intelligence is all over the news. Siri has a thing now. Siri does some pretty interesting stuff. You know, and Siri, being what it is, or what she is, and what it is, it's artificial intelligence software that Apple has designed for the iPhone, right? Those of you who, spoiler alert, it's a personal assistant, if you will. And it does a lot of things, and it's kind of cool. But this is a prime example of how artificial intelligence can kind of go wrong. And perhaps you've seen this, but we're gonna try this. I haven't tried this, so this is going to be a first. Sorry. So let's see what we can do here. we're going to try something here. Siri, define mother.
As a noun, it means a female parent, a woman in relation to her child or children, or a female animal in relation to its offspring. As a verb, it means to bring up a child with care and affection.
Right. So you do that. Now you do it a second time, right? Siri, define mother.
As a noun, it means a woman in relation to child or children to whom she has given birth.
Right on.
Do you want to hear the next one?
Yes.
As a noun, it means short for motherfucker. Want to hear the next one?
No, that'll do. Thank you.
Make you unhappy?
No, it's hilarious. Thank you so much. Yeah, short for motherfucker. Who would have thought? So you got you got artificial intelligence here that is, well, it's not wrong. Oh, that made my day. See, this is the beauty. That's why, you know, you go out there and you stick it out there and you be a little off the cuff. I did not rehearse this. There's not any editing going on here. You can try it yourself. Just make sure that the kids aren't around or just go with the fact that I just did that. But you see, here's the thing. We are using artificial intelligence now to the point where it's in control of a lot of things, and there's nothing really wrong with that. I mean, as long as you make sure that what it has control of is relatively benign and harmless, where you're asking it definitions, at least Siri's got a great sense of humor about it. I saw this story earlier this morning. I'm glad I was able to get it before they issue a fix on this, because I know that they're going to do it. There's going to be somebody out there who's going to have a real problem with this. Oh, my kid just learned a new word. Yeah, that's right, motherfucker. It's I love it. I absolutely love it. I'm glad I got it on tape for you guys to really enjoy. And on that, do we have a special show for you kids? Yes, the lovely Liz Mandeville stepped into the studio. She came in all the way from Chicago. We had such a large time. She's a great lady, a lot of fun, very talented singer and songwriter and guitarist. And we just had, she's just a lot of fun. We had a great time. So Jeff and I sat down with her. We'll have a chat with her, and we'll have some more fun coming up right after this here on this show here from Radioland, motherfucker.
Hi, this is Reverend Oma from the Broom Closet Metaphysical Shop. The Broom Closet is your one-stop shop for all of your metaphysical needs, such as candles, gemstones, herbs, gifts, and more. We now also stock CBD oil, vape kits, lotion, and edibles. The Broom Closet is also host to monthly workshops, rituals, and drum circles for those interested in conscious living. The Broom Closet is the only place to get your cards read by me, Reverend Oma, or one of our other amazing readers. Discover the Broom Closet Metaphysical Shop in historic downtown Memphis or online at thebroomclosetmemphis.com. The Broom Closet, let us help you light your path.
How's it going?
I'm great. Still mad that it's cold. This weather sucks.
I didn't realize we were in Canada.
No. You know, the old thing about waiting 15 minutes, and if you don't like the weather, you wait 15 minutes, it'll change. It was so appropriate over the past two days.
I waited 15 minutes, and it got worse.
Right?
Liz Mandeville is here in the studio, all the way from Chicago, where it's probably much more pleasant up there now.
I have no idea.
Did they get some snow up there?
Didn't they select the East Coast and everything north of us?
We got a Canadian clipper going on. I was just down in Clarksdale, Mississippi, actually. So
right,
yeah.
I'm coming from the south where it's colder.
kind of strange. How long are you in town?
Well, I'm just here tonight. And then, I've just been told by American Airlines I'm flying home on thank you points because I spend so much money on my credit card.
Oh, wow.
And I was going to get to fly first class.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Looking forward to that. Yeah. Well, now they've said that because there is going to be, like, the perfect storm, I may end up just, you know, living in the airport.
You might be sleeping in the airport.
Maybe you should just hang out for another day or two. It'll be nice here tomorrow and the next day, and you can soak up some more Memphis culture.
That's like the camp I went to when I was a kid. Yeah, if you didn't have a good time this week, you should have been here last week. You better come next week.
Do you have any pressing dates up north that you got to hit? I mean, do you have a little time you can stay in town for a little
while? Well, I do have, many, many screaming people wanting me.
Well, I know that's true.
But no pressing dates.
No pressing dates.
No, actually, you know what I'm doing? It's not at all the blues. I'm doing a tribute to Burt Bacharach.
Oh, wow. I saw this on your Facebook page.
Oh, wow. Yes.
Back to back Burt Bacharach? Is that what it is? Yes.
That's what it's called. Yeah.
What is this?
Well, I was kind of thinking, not everybody loves the blues. I don't know why.
What the hell you say?
I know. Isn't that
this is
wild?
A blues show.
To
go, oh, play something else. Play some Bacharach.
Well, I was thinking about it, and I thought, if you listen to Bacharach songs, they are like so dark.
They are very dark.
They are very dark. They are so, it's like.
But with a romantic mood.
Opposite of blues, sort of lump-de-lump, like Chicago blues.
Yeah.
But the themes, the things that he's talking about, and the man himself, very, very dark individual. Because I read his book.
I must have missed all of the darkness in Burt Bacharach.
Okay, listen to this.
Yeah.
Do you know the way to San Jose? It's like happy, happy, happy.
Right.
And yet what he's saying in the song is, you know, everybody comes out to L.A. with these big dreams and has them crushed. All, you know, put $100 down and buy a car. In a week, maybe two, they'll make you a star. Weeks turn into years, how quick they pass. And all the stars that never were are parking cars and pumping gas.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Come out to L.A. and get screwed.
Yes. Yes. Having been there, you can see the sidewalks are littered with crushed dreams in
totally.
L.A.
You have to kick them out of the way as you're walking down the street.
Oh, it's brutal.
And get it all over your shoes.
Especially when you get to Hollywood and then you really see. Oh, it's heartbreaking down there.
It is tragic.
It is very tragic.
I've never been.
You should go.
L.A., Burt Bacharach, I'm learning stuff
I went.
Tonight.
It only took me one time out there and I was like, I'm going back to the Midwest, baby. That's why it is what it is.
I've been to San Diego and I've been to San Francisco. Both lovely cities, by the way.
They are lovely.
Never been to L.A.
L.A.'s weird, man. Yeah.
L.A. is a great big freeway. Oh, anyway. San Diego is a gorgeous place. That's where I got this guitar.
Really?
I call this guitar my pony. Because that's what every little girl wants.
What is it?
This is a Carvin.
A Carvin.
Electric acoustic. This is Koa wood from Hawaii.
Beautiful.
And rosewood neck. And
they give you any lip about flying with that thing?
It's from Hawaii.
It's Hawaiian.
March into the plane like I own it with the guitar on my back. And when they should make the suggestion that I need to check it, I look at them like.
How dare you?
You don't have to.
Check my baby.
Don't you know who I am?
I know what you people do with dogs. You're not touching
my guitar. I feel you.
Yeah.
You came in to play the festival down south. How did it go? I know there were some weather issues down there. It was a bit weird and wild.
Well,
and
it was from the sublime to the apocalypse was what it was.
That's a good way to look at it. Yeah.
It was every weather issue from A to X because you always have to leave a little something of the unknown
for the Y and the Z.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It started out beautiful, sunny, 83. People were having a blast. People were packing the streets and venues. Friday night was off the hook everywhere. I saw my friends. Deo had a great crowd out in front of the Rock and Blues Museum. Everyone was playing great. Our hands were all warm. And in the night.
It's important when you play guitar.
Yes,
it's
it is.
True.
Yeah. It doesn't sting as bad. Yeah.
In the middle of the night, the clouds opened up and it started torrential. I said, wait a minute, I hope I'm above the flash flood warning I've just gotten on my phone at 4:30 in the morning, thank you very much. And the harp player that I play with was camping down by the Sunflower River with his dog. And of course I start to panic because I'm the ultimate Big Mama band leader. Oh my God, Dizzy's going to, they'll find his body. His wife will never stop killing me. So
never stop.
She will never cease the killing. It will go on.
This is why she listens to Burt Bacharach, you see?
Right.
You see how this all kind of
goes? It's true.
There's that dark ribbon inside of this woman that really makes it work.
That's why I
How often do you get down here? You know, you and I met several years ago at the BMA thing. And we had such a big time. And I remember talking to you about that. And I was like, you should come down here and do a thing with us. And lo and behold, here you are. You've been with us before, I think. Have you been down here? You haven't been here. You may have been. Well, I don't know.
Not in this studio.
No.
I would have remembered this.
This is.
Looks like a theater in here.
This was a recording studio since the 60s.
Dude.
Charlie Rich did a bunch of stuff down here. Behind Closed Doors was all written down here. Yeah.
Forget it, really?
Oh, dude. R.L. Burnside's Wizard record, Mr. Wizard, was recorded in that room right there.
Oh, I must rub my fanny on the floor.
We'll make that happen. I'll make sure the camera's off. You go crazy.
The vibe, man.
You'd be surprised how often that happens.
Yeah, yeah.
Well,
or not
well,
surprised
no,
is the case.
You sexy things, you.
Yeah, yeah, and we're recording now, so... even right this second.
And
but
when we get behind closed doors.
This was called the Fox's the Silver Fox's Den. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I used to work in a factory way back in the day.
Uh-huh.
And that song would come on the radio and all the ladies on the line would swoon.
Oh, he was something, man.
Yeah,
yeah, he lived not far from here, but a couple of blocks from here. And he would, this whole area was his... This was his rehearsal space, his writing space. They did some recording down here.
Oh, God, I should have.
Storage.
Yeah.
South. I should have come from.
When they would get ready to go out on the road, his tour rehearsals were in here. This is the bathroom key for upstairs is his key.
Really?
Yeah, there it is. Yeah, there it is right
there. That's Charlie Rich's key.
That's it. Well, that little black thing right there is his.
I don't often download music off the internet, like buy music from Google or something. I'm a Spotify subscriber,
of course.
Because I'm on Spotify. They could stream me on Spotify, so I support myself.
Look up Liz Mandeville on Spotify.
Just keep it playing on all your devices at all times.
I had downloaded Charlie Rich's music on my computer, and sometimes I'll just sit there in my office and just... listen to Charlie Rich.
That the music that was written back because it is dated, you
it
know,
is.
Very
well,
very much dated, and that was a very it kind of harkens back to like when Elvis did the Memphis sessions here with In the Ghetto and Kentucky Rain and those type songs. There's a very very specific palpable feel to those songs that you just don't really get that much anymore. There was a very it's like wow, that's so 70s, but you could taste it nearly.
It's an era. I'm glad that I don't live there now, but sometimes it's nice to go visit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm really...
Wait, that's back when America was great again. It was great, right?
Oh, shut up.
That's what we're all trying to get back to. I thought that was the whole point of all that.
Oh, get sorry. Not, yeah. Sorry.
Nice job, Jeff. Way to go, buddy.
Not to get political.
No. I do... I do like the romantic. I do like the romantic idea of the past, of America's past. There is,
but it was
a romantic
so simple
notion.
Yeah,
right.
There, when you know, life was a lot more free for certain individuals. You know. Like, I like the John D. McDonald, Travis McGee mysteries.
I am a big fan.
Okay, thank you. Yes. I'm so glad to hear that.
Yes.
I caused my band to have to listen to those on Audible.
Oh, the guy that reads those does such a great job.
Oh, isn't it?
Yeah, he's awesome.
And I love that about the Travis McGee. Well, like, I was a little child in the 60s. My dad was a big, big fan of country music. So that's where I get my love for Johnny Cash and Charlie Rich. That's why I love that kind of what we would call elevator music now, like Burt Bacharach. I mean, that's the soundtrack of the 60s.
Right.
That's when you could smoke a cigarette.
In a hospital.
You know, you could wear a fur coat. Yes.
In a grocery store, in a hospital, yeah.
My mom's doctor used to smoke a cigarette. There was a big, you know, you'd be in there for your checkup. Okay.
He's got a butt going while he's got a finger up someone's ass, and he's like, you know, I think you're going to be okay, man. Want a lucky?
A butt for each hand, okay?
I classify it, well, I'm more of a child of the 70s, but I remember... my dad had a boat on Pickwick Lake, which it's about a two-hour drive south of here down in Mississippi.
Oh, lovely.
And one time, me and three of my friends were going to the boat with him and one of his buddies, and this is the birth of the Dodge Caravan. It's an early model Dodge Caravan. None of the seats are in the back. We're all, the three of us back there, there's a cooler, there's a whole bunch of gear, and because he's taking stuff down to the boat. Mm-hmm. His buddy's got a vodka Collins in his lap. Dad's drinking a beer. We get pulled over by the Mississippi
Highway Patrol. Yeah.
First, because he's going a little fast. And that gets let off completely with a warning. No, no matter. There's no seatbelts or seats.
No seatbelts.
Alcohol.
No,
and a vodka, open vodka Collins happening, you know.
Because zero everyone drank and smoked, and it was, you know, everyone had a high tolerance.
Very true. Very true.
So I like to revisit, although, you know, it probably was terrible for to be a woman. It was probably terrible to be a person of color. It was probably
horrible was horrifying
to be Asian. Yeah. And we know that that's true. And that's not what we want to revisit.
No.
We don't want to go back to that. But...
Well,
it's kind of fun. It's kind of fun. Like,
well, the window trappings were what that's. What, I think what you and I are talking about here. The music, film. You look at some of these movies that came out at that time.
Oh yeah.
And they never held up.
I recently saw 2001: A Space Odyssey.
Yeah.
Wow.
Like for the first time? Or?
No, again.
Oh, again. Yeah.
My parents took me to New Orleans when I was a child and walked me up and down Bourbon Street so I could hear the music and see the... My mom would say, yeah, Lizzie, when you're 18, I'm going to take you down here and you're going to dance on the bar. Yeah, high expectations, Mom. Thanks a lot.
Great, but, thanks.
You know, right? Thank you.
What we're going to get you
now
laid.
Now go home and marry a guy from the country club. Right. Oh, God. I'm ping-ponging in here. But anyway, but I got so much more out of America when I was a kid because my parents had the freedom to take me out of school when they had a better idea in mind. And the society trusted them to be the people in charge of me.
Right.
So I got to go and see the little Baptist churches of the South when I was a kid. And my daddy, the con man, had sold the idea to the magazine. Oh, yeah, we're going to go down and do a magazine spread on Little Churches of the South or Civil War battlefields. So I spent a lot of time when I was a kid in the South. I went to the Peabody Hotel when I was a little kid to stay here so my mother could show me Memphis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my dad loved New Orleans, and we'd go down there every year.
And what did he do now?
My dad was a fine artist. He went to the Art Institute in Chicago on the GI Bill after Korea. And so when I was a little kid, I was brought to gardens and galleries and concerts.
So art has been all just, yeah. It's in your blood.
All forms of cultural stimulation.
Were you the only musician in the family?
I have turned out to be. My dad.
So that others, sounded ominous.
Sizzle. My brothers and sisters, sizzle.
No.
No, my sister does hair and makeup, and she owns her own business in Florida.
Yeah.
I don't know what my brother's doing. He's off the grid.
I don't know what he's doing. He's insane.
My parents are both dead, so that's it. And but for me, so much my art has been so much a focus, a center, and a stabilizing factor. If you can, I mean, that's what has kept me going my entire life, music and art.
Yeah.
So every time I go into a, you know, I can't ride in a car, a grocery store, go to the grocery store, or be anywhere. I recognize the music and I'm singing along with it. You know.
Yeah.
It's like that, but.
Where did it start for you, though? Were you a little girl and decided, I'm going to play guitar, or were you a piano player? Was there anything that just fell into your lap, or what?
I knew every song on the radio. I was a very sick kid, and so I spent a lot of time at home with allergies and strep throat and everything.
Oh, you were that kid.
I was that kid. Yeah, I caught that. Everything.
Of course.
My dad gave me a radio that, you know, here, have this. Let me know when you need a new battery.
But the world came to you then.
And so, and I just go up and down the dial and learn all the songs.
Yeah.
And I always sang. And then when I was a little kid, I jump up on the piano bench and just play by ear. And that all ended when the Catholic nun beat the love of piano out of me.
You're going to hell for playing the devil's music, young lady.
Well, I'm going to hell anyway.
I hear you, honey.
My friends are there.
Yeah, that's where we're all headed.
The Catholics are not known for their love of or production of great music.
Children,
yes.
You got a classical background, too. So,
and
you know,
I'm Catholic.
I feel you.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I'm Reformed.
I'm not.
I was never Catholic. I was just a victim.
Oh, you were just a victim? I'm not really Catholic.
We won't go into detail on the victimization of Liz Mandeville here, but, you know.
Yeah, right.
Wait for the book.
Wait for the book.
You don't seem like the normal target.
Oh, my God. I'm afraid I have one tattooed on my back. But no, but I picked up guitar at 16 because there was a bunch of kids. My parents moved in mid-high school. Mm-hmm. I was in high school, not my parents. Clarify that. But so when you move to a small town and everybody else grew up together, went to grade school together, it's like, how do you fit into this? So I saw a bunch of kids that played guitars and mandolins and banjos and stuff, and I said, okay, I'd like to hang out with them. What do I do? And didn't realize, well, I sing, obviously, duh. So I picked up the guitar, and I started to play.
Were you doing, like, folk songs and stuff? The Joan Baez stuff?
Except I could never sing like her.
Yeah.
I was more like Tom Waits.
So where did the blues fall into this? How did that happen?
Well, I didn't realize that what I was hearing was blues. Some of what I, you know, one of the first records I ever bought was Muddy Waters' Heart Again. With that Johnny.
That's about as blues as it gets, or Liz.
Hello, right? Yeah. And I didn't even know it was blues. I was at the drugstore and they had a bin of records, and I bought that record, and I bought like Crosby, Stills, Nash, the one with their on sitting on a front porch somewhere. Mm-hmm. And I bought Steely Dan, Can't Buy a Thrill.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's a big Steely
Dan. I'm a big Dan fan.
Well, you know, what do you not like about Steely Dan? They're
and that record is, Can't Buy a Thrill is an incredible record.
It is. The stories they tell on that record, it's amazing. From the Ken Kesey, all their records are genius. They're just genius. So I guess I'm not your usual blues artist because I love things like Burt Bacharach and Steely Dan.
Well, but you,
and Frank Zappa.
In a way, though, you came through, as we've talked about, Jeff and I have talked about this before, a lot of blues musicians tend to come through the classic rock vibe. You know, they've discovered rock and roll, and then they go back into the blues. They kind of back themselves into it.
I wasn't smart enough to make that.
But you kind of did, though.
Well, I went
between jazz and.
I went to. I was interested in just having friends, so that kind of got me into folk.
Which is
music.
Why you have a guitar, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And then I moved to Chicago. Because I'd gotten a scholarship to do some theater school at DePaul. And I was completely and utterly pathologically shy. And so the idea of auditioning and becoming and getting rejected was forget it. I can't.
Well,
do
that's
it.
The backbone of showbiz, and it's soul crushing.
Rejection.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it hurts.
So then I found out I was wandering down Lincoln Avenue one day, and there was the old Kingston Mines with Lavelle mm-hmm. White, mm-hmm. who was being backed up by Aaron Burton and Larry Burton and Robert Plunkett. And I met, that was the day that I met Aaron Burton, and my life went, that was that great.
The big turn.
Meeting Aaron Burton, because I heard this music and I went, dying, this is it. Which I don't know why I like that one Muddy Waters album. Why didn't I go out and buy all the other Muddy Waters albums? Why didn't I even look? I don't know. Dude, it was too teenage, I guess.
Well, I don't know. Is there such a thing as being too teenage?
Yes.
Yeah.
You think so? Yeah. Well, you've got them.
I've got two daughters and a son. I can tell you, there is such a thing as being too teenage.
As I don't recall, I don't remember the Reagan administration, for God's sake, but...
you were probably high.
Probably so.
I know I was.
No, who wasn't?
I wasn't. I was going to private school, where they thought the devil be in you if you smoke the grass.
Well, there's that.
If you smoke the grass.
The grass.
Oh, don't smoke the grass. But see,
here we are now having the same conversation that I've had. I've had the marijuana conversation with my family. You know, when my mother passed away back in December, and she was sick. She had cancer, right? And I'm like, you need to have some marijuana. And she looked at me in complete utter horror. And my sister and her son helped us score some grass, right? So we're sitting there smoking pot. My mother's high as a bat's ass. And she says, is this what the fuss was all about?
Right?
Yeah.
And I said, And she goes, I was expecting, reefer madness. And this is the best thing in the world. And I said, see this old, and then when we, you were talking
point.
About the Nancy Reagan, Just Say No campaign did more damage to America than anything else.
One of our local congressmen, Steve Cohen, there's a YouTube video of him going off on the...
It's a brilliant piece of video.
He's talking about how the drug war failed, and we lied to an entire generation about the evils of marijuana.
Yep.
And they know we lied to them.
Yeah.
And because of that, they don't believe us when we say how bad meth is or how bad heroin is, and they go do it anyway. And that's what the Just Say No culture created is... this whole opioid epidemic.
Well, they lied about marijuana, so everything else must be
and that made
a lie, too.
He's like, we've lost the war on drugs because they found out we lied to them.
That's being too teenage, because that's the kind of logic that teenagers have.
Right.
Yeah, but it was but that's a turning point, though.
Canada is legalizing everything. Canada is legalizing pot. They are legalizing it across Canada.
I've already heard that they've issued an apology about it, too.
What? Because of all the Americans that are going to go up there and just be walking around high.
The Canadians are
in thermal underwear.
Just about nice Canadian.
Arkansas
people.
Has gone medicinal.
Arkansas is not bad.
And it can allow. They're going to allow out of state sales. You can live in Memphis and go get it.
It's just ridiculous. It's just so ridiculous.
So when are you moving to Memphis?
You know what? I like it here.
Yeah, it's nice.
Some of my
the weather blows,
but are here. Man, I love Tao.
But you got a lot
Cindy
of fans.
Dasbach.
You got a lot of people
love
up Tao here.
Tao Dasbach and Cindy Hudak. They're my dear friends of the Rock and Blues Museum. I always come and stay with them when I'm in Memphis. They come up to Chicago and stay with me and my husband.
Well, tell me this then. You having spent time down here, as you come a lot down into the Mid-South, and you play down the Delta, and you play Memphis. In terms of the style of blues, like Chicago blues, there's a clear difference. We're pocket players down in here.
It's different all over the country. It's different. It's similar. It's like Spanish. When you go to Mexico, they speak Mexican Spanish.
Yes.
In Spain, they speak Castilian Spanish. Yes. Well, all over South America is different Spanish.
Yep.
Everywhere in the world, they play the blues. It's the same language. But it has a different colloquial
It has an accent. To it. Yeah.
Exactly. And I am extraordinarily partial to Memphis blues. And you hear it on all my records.
Yeah.
everything I've ever put out has Memphis blues on it.
We got a couple of your records.
It has a Lumpy Lump, of course, because I'm a Chicagoan and I'm tipping my hat to Jimmy Reed. And, you know, the Chicago sound comes directly
from the John Lee Hooker type of vibe.
Right, right.
That's a Lumpy Lump.
And that's Chicago.
That's Chicago. Because it makes you want to swing your butt back and forth.
All right,
slowly.
So on that then,
hurt yourself.
let's do a comparison. What's Memphis then?
Well, it's got horns.
That's not it.
That's not only it.
Well, like, for example, my last album, I have a song with Minoru Moriyama and I wrote together. My last album was The Stars Motel. And after the crash, people still had to tour. But the clubs, everybody had taken such a beating, the clubs couldn't have musicians and buy them hotels. So people were still coming to Chicago to play, and I had a call from a buddy that was on the same label as me, and he said, "Hey, Liz, I'm coming up with my band from Oklahoma. We've got a gig at the Buddy Guys and a gig at the House of Blues and a day off in between and no rooms. What do we do? Do you know any places cheap?" I say, "Yeah, but you don't want to sleep there." He says, "Well, what would you do?" I said, "Well, are you an a-hole?" And he goes, "No." And I said, "Well, how many are you? Three of you? Okay, well, you can stay in my studio. I have a studio in the basement of my building and where we band practice. Right, and I've recorded my last three albums there. And you and I have to write and record three songs while you're here. On your day off."
That's a fair deal.
Yeah.
That's a very fair deal.
Yeah, that's what I said. And he said, "Well, that sounds great to me." So we did. So Scott Ellison, that's his name, Scott Ellison and I have these three tunes. And then Rochelle Koba, who I mentioned before, she's a wonderful guitar player, singer from Miami. And she had been nominated for a Blues Blast Award. And she called me up and she goes, "Liz, I know how to get to Chicago, but where in the F is Carbondale?"
It's a little south, a lot of south.
A lot south.
It's like closer to here than it is to Chicago,
True
I think.
That. Yeah. I said to her, "Well, here's the deal. You come up a week early, stay with me, we'll write three tunes, and I'll drive you there." So, done. So we have six.
Man, you've got like the best deal going.
So yeah, you got a nice little hustle going. I like this.
Well, it's a way to have a record label. You know.
So I'm coming to Chicago. I'm going to stay at your place, and I don't know dick about making any music, but you know.
Then you have to pay.
What do you want her to do? What do you want to do forever? Record you reading her memoirs?
I guess, yeah.
Hey, can do that. That might
I'll bring
be
a kazoo and a slide whistle.
This whole bartering system, yeah.
Yeah, no, it has its limits, apparently.
A kazoo and a slide whistle. Well, let's see who's that. Oh, Dario Lombardo, who used to play with Phil Guy, the late Phil Guy, Buddy's brother, passed from prostate cancer.
Yeah, that's right.
And Dario had come to pay tribute to him on the Chicago Blues Festival. Well, they forgot to get him a room.
Oh, no.
And here he is, and he has friends in Chicago, but one of them was going to be in Colorado on tour, and another one's like downstate in Illinois or whatever. And I said, "Okay, here, I'll pick you up at the airport, three tunes." So there's nine tunes.
Is that... One of these records has all that on here, I think.
The Stars Motel.
Yeah, I don't have that.
Oh, no, I have Heart of Chicago and Clarksdale.
Yeah, there's nothing.
Yeah, but you have a lot of, like, one of these has, like, you know, featuring, yeah, this one. Heart of Chicago has Eddie Shaw, Joan Gand.
Oh, my dear Eddie Shaw. God rest his beautiful soul.
Charlie Love, Billy Branch, yeah.
See, I always make concept albums, whether anyone notices or not. I'm just entertaining myself here. And Clarksdale is a concept because it's a roots to the fruits statement.
Yeah.
And I came down to Clarksdale. A friend of mine, I'd said, "The heck with it. I'm not going to do blues anymore. I'm just going to sit on my butt and just watch television." Fuck it. Oops, that was on.
You can say whatever the fuck you want. Yeah.
I can?
Yeah, fuck yeah.
Ooh, hey.
The FCC's not listening. They don't give a shit.
No. I was wondering why you said a-holes earlier. I didn't know.
You can say asshole if you'd like. Yeah.
Okay, well.
Whatever the fuck you want to do.
Yeah.
Well.
And you know what else? I'm recording this shit to release later, so we can really offend people from all over the place. If they don't like it, fuck them.
Fuck them.
Okay, then.
That's a promo right there, man. I'm glad we recorded that.
This is Liz Mandeville, and I say, fuck them.
And I approve this message.
You're listening to the Blues and Blues with the Right on.
There it is. Boom. There it is. Piece of cake. I've got a break coming up here, but before I take it, since you got that guitar there, can we favor a song out of you?
Sure, absolutely. I'd be happy to. In fact, I'll do one Dario and I wrote together called A Bad Blues Habit. Y'all sing along.
What's the story? He stayed in your studio.
I got a bad blues habit, and then you say, I got a bad blues habit.
Oh, it's okay. Call and repeat.
I can do that, I think.
Yeah, well, you're the man.
Out of key, man.
And you guys, too. I have never known Theo Dasbach to be so quiet.
It's the ball gag he's wearing.
Pour so much money down the drain of the blues. The blues is like smack. It's a thing you got to use. Need it every day. Got to have it every night. Without my blue shot, I just don't feel right. I've got a bad blues habit.
Bad blues habit.
I've got a bad blues habit.
Bad blues habit.
Well, I need my blues. I've got to have it. Can't help myself. I've got a bad blues habit. Blues got me running. I roll from town to town. Cause I became a blues dealer and I got the best shit around. Got to have it every night. Oh no, first taste is free. After that you got to pay. And you're gonna need it every single day. You'll have a bad blues habit.
Bad blues habit.
You'll have a bad blues habit.
A bad blues habit.
Well, I need my blues. Got to have it. Can't help yourself. You got a bad blues habit. Someday, if I die, I'll meet Satan down in hell, and I'll lay my good blues on him, and I'll get him hooked as well. He'll try to deal, but it won't be long till even Satan's got to hear my blues song. He'll have a bad blues habit.
Bad blues habit.
He'll have a bad blues habit.
Bad blues habit.
Well, he'll need my blues. He's got to have it. Can't help himself. He's got a bad blues habit. Got a bad blues habit.
Bad blues habit.
You got a bad blues habit.
Bad blues habit.
I got a bad blues habit.
Bad blues habit.
I got a bad blues habit. Well, you need my blues. You got to have it. Can't help yourself, you got a bad blues habit.
That's brilliant.
Thank you
very much. Liz Mandeville, ladies and gentlemen. You want Grammys?
Yeah, you better believe it.
We can probably make that work.
I want a Grammy before I...
All you have to do is don't suck and spend a little money.
I have never sucked. Yeah. That's why I don't have a Grammy.
You got to spend a lot of money. I think that's part of it.
It's a money game.
I know you've got a campaign your album to the Academy or whatever.
There's a lot of marketing and PR.
Do you do
a lot of marketing and PR outside of you, or do you have people that help you with that?
Well, I have done marketing experiments. When I was with Earwig, of course, they marketed me.
Yeah.
And I've spent money trying to figure out where to market. Am I on the air again?
Yeah, we're live.
Oh.
Yeah, we're live.
Nice to know before I say something else.
We just turn the mics on and just go. Okay. Typically, the clue is when we got these on, you know, these headphones on.
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
Mama told me not to come.
Oh, boy, God, there was a joke there, and I'm not going to say it. There's a lot of marketing that goes, you know how the music business is. I mean, it's about push and push and push and push. You know, writing and creating is one thing, and then recording is another animal. And then once you have all that done, the real work begins. And a lot of younger artists are still trying to wrap their heads around that and how
so
much
true.
Labor that goes into it. You know, as you know, a performance is about, 1% of everything that you do.
Yeah, well, you can have the most fabulous product in the world, and if nobody knows about it, then you sit there with a bunch of angry cocktail waitresses and bartenders wondering why you're getting older and not richer or more famous.
I've seen this happen when the disc shows up, the physical disc, and an artist just makes it, and they're standing there, and they literally hold their phone in one hand and look at that disc, and they look at their phone like it's about to start ringing. And I'm like, dude, you've just opened the door a little bit. You've got a lot of work ahead of you.
For me, I found it's all about relationships and networking and making friends with people. And what can I do to help you? And what can, you know, and then in that.
Scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. Yeah.
Yeah. And.
Sleep on my floor and
I wish that.
Hey, now.
I was standing.
Mama told me not to come.
In the checkout line at the Staples and waiting to. You know, pay for my office supplies, and there just happened to be a book there, and I'm a nut for books. I'm a big reader, so I picked this book up. It's called The Little Black Book of Networking.
Yes.
And I read this book, and I bought it, and I took it home, and I read it again, and I was like, why didn't I find this when I was 20? Because this is the secret to everything, not just the music business, but every business. And everyone, no matter what you're doing, you're selling something.
Right.
Uh-huh.
No matter, and there is annoying sales. There are people that you don't even want to answer the phone because you know they're going to try to sell you something. And then there are people that are like seriously genuine human being, and they're like, not, what can I get out of you?
Right.
You know, I'm going to get this gig from you, and I'm going to make you pay me $1,000. And then I don't care if I ever see you again or if your house burns down or whatever. Is not the way to have a career in anything. You have to genuinely not only love what you're doing and what you're selling that is so part of you, but you also have to care about the people that you're selling it to.
Yeah, how far does the old adage of you've got to spend money to make money go?
Well, I've spent that last song that I sang should tell you. Yeah. I've poured so much money down the drain of the blues.
Well, yeah.
But you know, what was it? Was it Hunter S. Thompson that said, he said that about the music business.
The long dark hallway?
The trench.
Yeah, the trench lined with thieves and dogs and lawyers. And
and then there's the downside.
And then there's the downside, yeah.
No, it was somebody else then that said, how do you make favorites. A small fortune in the music business? Start out with a large fortune.
That makes sense.
It's totally true.
But like I said, I've always felt that music is necessary for me. I cannot not make music.
Right.
If it's so in you, it's got to come out.
I might as well make money at it.
Yeah.
I would have enjoyed being the weather lady on TV. I thought that would be a good gig
in
too.
Chicago.
Any place.
A tough gig.
Yeah.
Well, I'd be busy.
Yeah.
You'd be busy, all right.
I'd be on every 15 minutes.
Well, you know, they say the easiest job in the world is the weatherman in San Diego.
Warm and sunny.
Warm and sunny
again.
72 degrees.
He's just sitting there with a drink in his hand because he just doesn't care anymore.
Right. Yeah. So I'm assuming you do this full time then, right? Do you have another?
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
Yes, I do. I have multiple income streams.
Yeah.
Music. I teach voice lessons by Skype or FaceTime.
Yeah.
Oh,
wow.
I can teach anyone anywhere in the world as long as we figure out time.
Yeah.
And I have publishing royalties from all this stuff.
Yeah.
One thing I learned from Michael Frank when I was recording for Earwig Music Company was always record your original material, always copyright and publish your original material.
That's correct.
And continue to make sure that your material is getting airplay.
Yes.
So encourage other people to cut your material. You know, I've written a couple of tunes, no, you don't know, that were picked up and recorded by dance people. They were remixed.
Oh, really?
I get Spotify royalties. Yeah.
Really? EDM, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
How cool is that?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I thought it was pretty awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
There are kids taking ecstasy.
They're dropping Molly and going crazy. Yeah,
that's right. Blues music.
And wearing those lighting up ears.
Yeah.
Those ears.
Yeah, yeah, all of a sudden your stuff is at a Deadmau5 show and you're just kind of...
awesome!
I know, Deadmau5 is the man. Which kind of brings me to a point. I mean, with the way the industry has changed so much, you know, we're here on the internet and there's a ton of stuff out there.
Yeah.
And... for musicians, getting their material out there is obviously a good selling point. It helps sell a record. That's what you and I are talking right now in hopes that somebody will find Liz Mandeville out there on iTunes or wherever and buy your music.
Spotify. She's all over Spotify.
You know.
I'm on all of the streaming mediums.
But
yes.
Do you find then that the best route to go for a musician would be the sale of tickets and merchandise, or is it the sale of records or downloads? I mean, what is it? Is there a formula for you that works? I know everybody's a little bit different.
I find the two most important things are good manners and good dental hygiene.
Well, okay then. I stand corrected.
Brush
your fucking teeth, kids.
Go to the dentist.
Go to the dentist.
Get that plaque off. you know, you want to always have good manners. Make sure, because people don't remember what you said. They remember how you made them feel.
Uh-huh.
And if you come off like you are the shit and no one else matters, then... you don't matter. I'm sorry. You're done.
Is that what I've been doing wrong all this time?
That's exactly your problem,
you,
Jeff.
Darling.
You're just such an asshole. You know.
Well, I have a radio show up in Chicago.
Do you really? Yeah.
Yeah, I do.
Where are you?
I'm with Northwestern Radio at WNUR.
WNUR.
WNUR has a Sunday blues show from 3 to 5. And
AM or PM?
The 3 a.m., I'm like just thinking about going to
what
bed.
What the hell are you playing blues at that hour of the day? It's a nighttime thing.
PM on a Sunday?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's a slot we got. We're not that important.
I got
kids.
You. I got you.
No, it's all day long roots block.
Yeah.
They play gospel and folk and Americana and then blues and then jazz.
How cool.
Yeah. Blues show.
Yeah. WNUR. Are you streaming it too?
Yeah. WNUR.org.
There you go, kids.
Yeah,
another show.
We're out there all over.
So you skipped the show today, obviously.
Yes, I'm very lucky to be part of a good team. We have Terry Abramson, who's written music for Muddy Waters.
Oh, wow. I knew that name.
Books. He recently wrote a children's book about the blues, so that the
you got the blues,
grade
bitch.
School kids.
Yeah.
Her show sounds better than ours.
I know, really.
Lynn Orman, who's a publicist and promoter, who has worked for Earwig and Alligator and has done work for Blues in the School. She's worked for Eddie the Chief Clearwater as his publicist for years, decades. She works with Bobby Rush. She works with the Grammys. She's like a just so energetic and such a wonderful person. And she's doing the show. She was doing the show today. Steve Temkin.
Yeah, no kidding. Wait, y'all want to take over this one?
Yeah, well, if I come to Memphis, look out, baby. Keep the seat warm for me.
I will, yes.
Steve Temkin is a singer and just a bluesophile. You ask him a question about anything and he knows, or he's got the record and he'll look it up. He's got, you know, really great, knowledgeable.
That's why I keep Jeff around.
I recruited him to be a DJ on the show because of that. Because he called me up when I was on the air and go, oh, by the way, what you just said was blah, 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 and it really is blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, Steve, you need a show.
And people like to listen to that type of stuff.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing I like to talk about.
Some of us have a mind that Like, I can't make money at anything else in life, but if I could be on Rock and Roll Jeopardy just once, I could
actually. Oh, yeah. Oh,
kill. I would kill.
We could make that happen.
Rock and Roll Jeopardy would be a show I'd watch.
They used to have that on VH1.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was.
They used to get regular people, but then they would do like celebrity episodes. But, wow. And I used to like, that's the one thing I'm good at. Why can't I do that? Like, I have a brain full of useless trivia. But
well,
I can't convert that into
it,
a living.
Baby,
it's a long time ago. But yeah, that's like Rick said. I'm always here with a stupid anecdote about.
Well,
something, cause,
before you got here, we were just talking about Stevie Ray Vaughan.
Oh, wonderful
and
guy.
Just today or last night, the Fender Strat that he recorded the very first record, Texas Flood.
Yeah.
Not the SRV guitar. It was the tan and black.
Not his number one or Lenny.
Yeah. That guitar was just sold at auction in Dallas, which is his home city. And what do you think it went for? It's unsigned.
Oh.
But it was pedigreed, and there's a certificate of authenticity. The COA is with it. It came from the. How much do you think it sold for? Take a stab.
Just a guess, a shot in the dark. No.
You'll probably be right.
$10,000.
Ooh, no, you're wrong.
Oh.
No, he nailed it.
Well, I was still a little high, but I said $250,000.
Yeah, $210,000 something there. Yeah.
What did the money go for?
I have no idea. It was a blurb that came across my feed earlier that guitar had sold, and
it wasn't even signed.
It wasn't even signed. Yeah,
but that's a piece of.
And that had to have come from family, or maybe the studio had it. I don't know.
That had to have been family.
Well, that would have been Jimmy then?
And maybe either Jimmy or his whole guitar tech.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Well, didn't he have kids, Stevie Ray?
I don't know that he did.
No.
I don't think he did. He was.
Oh. I think he was single when he died.
He was divorced. I think he was seeing somebody when he died. But he had been married in the...
On the anniversary of his sobriety, too, which is just, messed up. But
well, that was such a tragic thing.
Yeah, but
it was horrible.
It is, but now that I'm older and I look back on all that, I mean, it really is the stuff of blues legend, or just music legend, rock godhood, I've seen footage from that concert from that night. Have you ever... Because you're from that area.
Alpine Valley, though.
Yeah.
I know that area.
So that concert had... It was Eric Clapton, I think, was supposed to be the headliner.
I believe so,
but
yes.
Robert Cray was there, Jimmy Vaughn, was Gary Moore there?
There was like four or five acts on the
internet. I should go to the internet, but at the end of the show, they all came out and jammed together.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a legendary lineup, just a legendary night, and then...
And then he died.
He was supposed to
go to Legends, wasn't he, and jam with Buddy at Buddy Guy's Legends in Chicago?
Well, I think the way the story goes, Clapton's people were all taking helicopters back to Chicago, and Clapton's chopper with his entourage was like about to take off, and Stevie Ray was like, I'm supposed to get back to this family thing back in Dallas. I got to get to the airport. Is there any way I can get a ride on your chopper? And so Eric Clapton's like, yeah, just take my seat.
Just like the Clear Lake incident with the crickets. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, with Waylon Jennings and the Bopper and Richie Valens. And
The night the music died.
The night the music died, yeah.
And it, I mean.
Oh, it was horrible.
I'm going to go to hell for saying this because I grew up an Eric Clapton fan, though. I know how Rick feels about Eric Clapton, but it just feels like if we'd lost Eric Clapton that night, he had a really great run, man. He already left that legacy behind, but Stevie Ray was still kind of in the...
He was beginning to hit his real prime,
I
think.
Yeah, he was just about to
And it was stride. It was tragically cut short, And
I agree with you.
Not that I wish Eric Clapton had died.
I used to live with my first ex-husband in this little college neighborhood on the north side of Chicago, and there was this college bar called Stinkers. And my husband was addicted to Pac-Man at that time, and he'd be down at the corner just playing. He'd be on,
just pumping quarters into that damn thing.
Was it the tabletop where you sat down on it or the stand-up version?
I don't know. I didn't play it. It wasn't my thing at all. He'd go, I don't know what you did then. I don't think they had the internet then. It was the early 80s, right?
No. And, feeding it quarters,
but
that's all.
But he paid somewhere to get the charts to figure out how to beat Pac-Man.
Oh, wow.
Obsessively beating Pac-Man.
Wow.
And one day he's there, and the NAMM show was in Chicago, and there was a one of those blinker signs running across the top of the bar. This weekend, Kevin Lee and the Heartbeat with special opening act Stevie Ray Vaughan.
Wow.
And we happen to live really close to Alligator Records, and I knew Mindy Giles, who was then vice president at Alligator, and she'd said, oh, well, I'm going to bring this guy in that I thought was really great and have Bruce Iglauer look at him. And here he's going to be playing at the corner bar right now by our house.
Right.
Well, my then husband was from Dalton, Georgia, and all of his friends had gone to Austin, Texas. And they were all crazy about the Fabulous Thunderbirds, like, man.
Oh my God, that band is...
When it was Jimmy Vaughan and Kim Wilson and Fran Christina and I'm going to get his name right. Anyway, that's not the point.
Right.
We loved the Thunderbirds. We never had a gig when the Thunderbirds were playing. We went to see them.
Huh.
And so here this guy's playing on the corner. So we had a gig, and so my husband went for their sound check. Never met Stevie Ray, but we kept hearing about, oh, if you think Jimmy's hot, well, you should go see his little brother. He's the shit, man. That guy's like smoking. You go, well, my ex-husband's a guitar player, and he's going to go see this little kid who's the shit when he thinks Jimmy Vaughan is the sun rises and sets. Well, he goes down there and just he gets his hair blown back. I mean, he's like...
Yeah.
Spin his head around. I mean, he's like, oh, that's it.
And
I
you know what?
Just go home and burn my guitar.
Stevie goes, always said that Jimmy was the better guitar player in the family.
Yeah, but Jimmy always. Jimmy's.
Yeah, but yeah. Everybody.
Stevie came off the stage and walked over, and my husband, who hated everybody, said, man, you are the shit.
Yeah.
You are the serious shit. And Stevie reached over and with those
big meat gloves that he had.
And, thanks, man. Like, so humble.
Yeah,
like no one had ever complimented him. Like, he was just so genuine and sincere. And my husband said, I never can play again because my hand got broken in that handshake.
His massive hands.
Heavy, heavy strings, like he took them off a piano or
something.
Yeah.
Telephone.
But didn't make it to Alligator Records.
I was at one of the tapings that Stevie Ray did at Austin City Limits, and it was the one where Jimmy was there, and watched them with the double neck guitar.
Oh yeah, during the Family Style tour.
And the Family Style thing, and when
yeah, I saw them at Summerfest.
When Stevie walked up behind Jimmy and played the other neck.
Yeah, they were doing.
And then they're swapping. They're swapping hands. Oh, it was so cool. And it was one of the loudest shows I had ever attended. Oh, it was incredible. The power that came out of them was just remarkable.
And the two of them together. Oh, man. That was such a cool. Oh, wow, though.
And then was it Memphis in May? Double Trouble was playing with Buddy Guy. When Buddy Guy last played Memphis in May.
Yeah, I missed that. I actually saw Stevie Ray with Double Trouble right before.
Oh, yeah.
That May before the helicopter ride.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Johnny Winter was right before them. It was one hell of a
night. God, that's a hell of a show. God, man. You ran into the bass player.
Oh, Tommy Shannon?
Yeah, Tommy Shannon,
Tommy
in
Shannon.
In Austin,
Antone's in Austin has a, I think every Wednesday night, the Tommy Shannon band, his old three-piece, they play most every Wednesday. It's not every Wednesday, but they do it like a 6:30, 7 o'clock show. You go after work. They play till about 8 or 9 o'clock, get out of there. But it's fantastic. Of course, I think Tommy Shannon's 72 now.
I think so, yeah.
Last time I was there, the woman in front of us in line to get in was, I don't know if I'm going to pay $10 to go in. She turned to me, have you heard of this Tommy Shannon guy? I was like, yeah, he's a bona fide Rock and Roll Hall of Famer.
I mean, I'm not sure if I want to pay $10 to see Tommy.
Yeah, 10 bucks, bitch. Get out of here.
Back of the line.
Hey, Liz Mandeville is in the studio.
Yes,
speaking
she is.
Of lady.
You noticed right now.
This has been great conversation. I'm so glad we had you.
You haven't played but one song here. We're about toward the end of the show here, but we do too. And we find that a lot of people like to hear stories from folks, and you have certainly given us that.
Thank you. Yes, I.
And I'm looking forward to having you come back to Memphis.
Oh, I can't wait to do this. This is a wonderful
idea. And we've talked about some, talked a little bit off the air about doing some stuff down here. We can make that. We can make some dreams come true.
Oh.
We're sort of the Willy Wonka of the music industry.
Yeah.
As long as
I've got a golden ticket.
You just don't want to lick the wallpaper here.
Lick the wallpaper. Nasty.
Do you want to play it? You want to play a tune? You want to do something?
Sure.
What do you got here for us?
Well, I like to swing a little bit.
Well, okay then.
Yeah, wow.
So what song are you going to play?
I got a ginger tabby sleeping in my lap. And you can curl up with us if you want to take a nap. You got to scratch the kitty.
Right on.
I want to scratch my kitty. Go ahead and scratch that kitty if you want my kitty to purr. Well, my kitty don't do tricks. She don't sit up and beg. Sits so quiet at the top of my leg. You got to scratch that kitty. Go ahead and scratch my kitty. Oh, now scratch my kitty. I want my kitty to purr. Doggy, and you like doggies too. I always scratch my kitty when I'm thinking about you. I just then I well scratch my kitty cause I want my kitty to purr. Come scratch that kitty, scratch my kitty now. Go ahead and scratch. Now scratch my kitty. Go ahead and scratch my kitty, cause I want my kitty to purr.
Love it.
Nice.
That's not thinly veiled at all.
Oh, no. It's really about my little cat, Frankie. I had a little cat, and a girl came to the door ringing the doorbell for Greenpeace one time. And I felt so bad because here's this cute little young thing, and she's out in the rain going door to door in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, I'm not going to give you money for Greenpeace because... Anyway,
but fuck Greenpeace.
Fuck Greenpeace.
Screw the whales.
Yeah.
Damn whales. Taking up all that space in the ocean.
That's right.
But
get in the way of all those
tunas. Come on in and give me your pitch and sit down and have a cup of tea or something and get out of the wet for a minute. And so she comes into my apartment and she looks down and she sees my cat and she goes, "Oh, how adorable! You have a ginger tabby." And I said, "A ginger tabby. Let me write that down." I've got a ginger tabby, and from that the song was born.
Isn't it funny how that works out like that? You just hear like a couple of words and just the turn of a phrase, and then the whole story just happens.
I was having a huge fight. My first ex-husband and I would never fight about anything but music.
You and your first ex-husband must have just, y'all were just between Pac-Man and fights. I mean, Lord of mercy.
Well, I talk about him a lot, considering, I never see him, ever. But
must have left an impression.
Yeah, well, anyway.
Several, apparently.
We did spend 13 years making each other miserable.
Well, so. There's that. Yeah. Do it.
You know, but we were having this huge fight, and our neighbor was there. Our neighbor was a house music producer, and he's just sitting there laughing at us. You know, sitting there with his arms folded, just watching the drama. And I'm yelling at him, I am not serving a life sentence of the blues. And Billy Williams pulls on my coat and he goes, Liz, stop fighting for a minute. Write that down. That's a good line.
Perfect.
My first ex-husband was a great blues Nazi. And it was like, we have to play the song exactly the way it is on the record.
Oh, really?
Little
yeah.
Walter played a clam. You are going to play a clam. If they sang an extra bar, you're going to sing an extra. We don't get to vamp. We don't get to.
Was he a purist?
You think?
Wow.
Yeah, but when you remake a song, you're supposed to put your own spin on it.
Hello. That's what otherwise, the fight was about.
Otherwise, why remake the song?
Oh, baby, come on. I ain't serving a life sentence of the blues.
Yeah, no kidding. So. You know, was it George Thorogood said that all the great songs were already written? And I'm just
and
here.
And then he went ahead and wrote some
and
more.
And then he wrote some more. And then he hit a hit with Get a Haircut and Get a Real Job.
That was
his, like his only real original hit.
Song.
Yeah, it's only original
else
hit.
Was covered.
Everything. Yeah, Bad to the Bone, all that stuff. Those
but
are all covered.
Sure, they'd make him his own.
No.
No, I mean his versions of those songs. I think he played the shit out of
them. Well, yeah, he did. I mean, yeah, he. Well, it's like looking at Led Zeppelin's first record, you know, and their second, and their third, quite frankly. But you know, there's.
Now tell us how you really feel.
Those are well, and I like Led Zeppelin. I'm a Zeppelin fan. I always have been.
I like the Led Zeppelin. But they have a Ginger Tabby.
They have a Ginger Tabby.
I like the Led.
Well, yes, and you know, what was he? You were telling me about Willie Dixon.
Willie Dixon sued them, and I think he got a settlement of like $1 million, and they put his name on all the.
On the reissues, the music, right?
Yeah.
On the publishing. Like
the Dixon family got paid, and now they have a foundation.
Yeah. Sure.
Thank goodness for that.
But it wasn't enough. It wasn't as much money as Led Zeppelin made off those songs.
Well, no.
By any stretch of the imagination.
No.
Well, which reminds me of that story that we've heard about Furry Lewis here in Memphis. The Rolling Stones were playing over at the Liberty Bowl, and it was in the summertime, and it was very, very hot and very humid here, very sticky. And Mick didn't want to go out until it cooled off a little bit.
Well, good luck with that. Are you waiting for October or what?
So,
be back in October.
So the crew said we could probably get an opening act for this thing. So they wound up rounding up Furry, and they got his guitar out of Hawk, and they put Furry in front of like 120,000 people, which he gladly did.
Sure.
And played.
Who wouldn't?
He played for. He played for like 45 minutes, something like that. And he's like, are they ready to come on yet? And they kept going, no, keep playing. He played for like an hour and a half.
They probably gave him $150.
And Mick realized, it's not getting any cooler. We should go out and do the show. And then out comes the Stones. Furry leaves. He gets back into a car. They take him over to the Wendy's to get a burger and a quart of 10 high whiskey.
Oh, geez.
Put his guitar back into Hawk, and then he's
didn't they, isn't that because that really? Didn't they give him a guitar like that one that's hanging on the wall at the Hard Rock? That was,
I think yeah, I think there was a
Furry's guitar, but it was like
because Keith was the only one that was like really sympathetic to the whole thing. You know, yeah. Keith Richards was like, well, you know, because he was always a blues guy anyway.
Yeah,
and the story was about how the Stones came together through Mick and Keith was that. They happened to be at a bus station together or a train stop or somewhere along.
Train.
Yeah, a train. And
you're that guy from high school. Yeah, you're that other guy from high school.
And they had one of them just come from a record shop and he goes, what did you buy? And he goes, well, I got this Furry Lewis. I got this. I got, you know, and they were like, hey, I like that stuff too.
Chuck Berry and
Chuck Berry. And yeah, and then that's how it all happened.
You know, they just had that wonderful Stones exhibition in Chicago at Navy Pier.
Really?
I went twice.
Oh, really?
And they had an actual mock-up of the London apartment that they shared.
Oh, really?
And all the stuff. They had their record collection there, and they had, like, here, this is what they actually...
They have, like, an ashtray full of butts and...
Yeah, and empty beer bottles and dirty dishes. Like, it's a... But the actual record player and their records are...
Their actual record player?
Yeah.
Wow.
And they had recreated the studio that they recorded in when they were there, and they had footage of them playing, and then they had the musical instruments that they used and the recording.
Who had
that,
all of this?
Well,
I guess between Mick and Keith, they just kept it, I guess.
They even had Mick would make artistic lists of their practices, their rehearsal, like on a poster board. They had collections of those. They're dated. There's the different songs that they rehearse.
It is cool, but it also shows kind of how big of a bitch that Mick is.
Yeah, but also...
Oh! I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, please.
Well, they were saying that Mick Jagger has like, okay, I've got an idea, get up, we're all going in the studio. And Frank Sinatra, I just had seen a documentary about him, is exactly the same. Well, he was exactly the same way. Okay, Frank... gives you a phone call, or his minions do.
Yeah.
Get up. Frank has got a plane. We're all going to Rome for pasta.
Yeah.
And if you don't get on the plane, you're out of the pack.
Yeah.
That's the way it is. Same thing with Mick Jagger. You get up and you do what Mick wants. When Mick gets an inspiration, we are on it. It's happening. And that's why he obsessively made these cards and that's why there's all this stuff.
Wasn't Prince kind of the same way, too, about if Prince wants a camel at 3 in the morning, somebody brings a camel to him at 3 in the morning? I mean, it's just...
Well, he should have been in Clarksdale this past weekend, because there was a camel.
There was a camel in Clarksdale. Wow.
Yeah, it was standing next to the monkeys riding dogs, but no one was paying attention to the poor camel.
What the hell kind of festival was this?
Monkeys riding dogs
and camels and blues people.
Cats and dogs running together.
Yeah, it's a nice
Dizzy, my harp player, felt sorry for the camel and almost bought it and brought it home with him.
Oh, really?
His dog objected to sharing the back of the pickup truck.
It's a long ride back.
Yeah, I want a pair of pigs. They're so cute. They're not going to get any bigger or anything, are they?
I thought if you are a... You said you're an avid reader. Have you ever read Keith Richards' autobiography, Life, My Life?
Yeah, part of it.
That's a hell of a book, man.
Yeah, I remember you telling me about it. You went to the audio version.
I went to the audio version, which is read by Johnny Depp, no less.
Oh, no, I'm going to get it now. I had it on my Kindle, so I wasn't hearing the audio.
Oh,
yeah.
Johnny Depp, okay.
Doing kind of a Keith Richards impression.
Oh, I love it. Don't you love the Pirates of the Caribbean?
Yeah, because that's Keith.
It's Keith as dad.
I think there's some chapters where it might be another actor because it's Johnny Depp. I don't know. But
it's a big book, though, isn't it?
It's well worth a listen. I didn't realize Keith Richards was a Cub Scout. He was a Boy Scout, which he attributes to that's when he couldn't afford a guitar and he was learning guitar. Like he learned how to the best thing the Scouts ever did for him was they taught him how to tie knots so he could reuse his strings because he couldn't afford to buy new strings, so he tied knots and the strings keep on playing.
I had to take heroin because it hurts so much when he hit a knot.
He's basically playing on barbed wire at that point.
Well, that's when he was young and couldn't afford strings. I'm pretty sure he didn't have to do that anymore.
Well, yeah, Jesus.
You heard the story about when the Stones were at a party with the new hip-hop crowd and Babyface was there. And Keith Richards went over to Babyface and he said, "Yeah, after 40 years in rock and roll, you'll just be old fuckface like me."
He's also famously said that it's easy playing guitar for the Stones. All you need is 5 strings, 9 fingers, and 1 asshole to run the whole thing.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, that makes sense. Makes sense.
That's love.
It is love. It is. It is truly love. Before we wrap it up, can I get another song out of you?
Oh, okay.
Please.
Well,
I'm asking nicely.
You did say please.
Yeah, don't make me beg.
And I did make that point about being polite in the music business.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'll get you everywhere.
Really?
Well, I sang a song about my cat, so I guess I should sing one about my dog.
Oh, my.
Okay, here it goes. A sweet, shiny brown eyes, sweet little wet nose, sweet, shiny brown eyes, cute little wet nose. When its master went to prison, he didn't have nowhere to go home. little dancing doll. My little butterscotch boy. Whoa, little dancing doll. My little butterscotch boy. When he's dancing on his hind leg, he's just a bundle of joy. When his master went to prison on a case of tax evasion, didn't have to ask me twice, he didn't take no persuasion. He said, take my dog, cause my woman is a mess. Can't stop crying and beating her breast, poor little dog. My poor little boy. He just trying to get some loving. Just a bundle of joy. When I'm walking my dog and heaven smiling on me, when I'm walking that dog, heaven smiling on me, nothing make me so happy as Moochie curled up at my feet.
There you go. There you go. Liz Mandeville, ladies and gentlemen, please don't be a stranger. Come by and come see us some more, if you would.
If I get any stranger, my friends won't know me.
Very good. Very good. I have to remember that.
Thank you so much. Thank you, boys.
You're an absolute, awesome. Absolute joy to have them here.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
This has been a joy for me, too.
Good.
I love it.
Good. Good. And safe travels back back north, and watch out for the weather.
Anytime you're in the area, let us know. Come on, join us.
We'll make room for you. Yeah. You'll always
we'll
have
figure
room.
It out.
Yeah, we'll make something.
We'll bump whoever the guest is.
Yeah, fuck them.
Okay, then. Thank you.
you never really know.
Get on the Memphis Brew Bus. Every Saturday at 2 p.m., we'll take a 3.5-hour adventure through the Memphis craft brewery scene. The Memphis Brew Bus stops at 3 local breweries for some special behind-the-scenes tours, talks with the master brewers, and, of course, tasting of their signature brews. While on the bus, you'll hear stories and learn about the history of beer. Plus, you'll get some music from the Radio Memphis Library. Go to memphisbrewbus.com and find them on Facebook. The Memphis Brew Bus. We'll drive you to drink.
Here's what's coming up on the next episode from Radioland with Rick Cheddar.
Do you write much?
I did for a week or two.
And then enough of that.
Yeah. Well, no, I try to. But, you know, one time I got up and I started I'd get up and drink my coffee and then I'd play guitar and then I'd start writing every day. And I did that for about 2 weeks. At the end of that 2 weeks, I had 10 songs written, you know. And I recorded them and wrote some for RL and some for me. And I guess that was enough. I hadn't written any more. I've been hoping I could, but, you know, they just have to come to me.
Sure, sure. Yeah.
For previous episodes, go to radio-memphis.com. To download episodes to your mobile device, search the show in iTunes, player.fm, stitcher.com, Pocket Cast, or TuneIn. And now, here's more with Rick Cheddar from Radioland.
Right, so there you go. Yep, Kenny Brown next time here on the program from Radioland. It was a fine time on that deal, that's for sure, and we'll share that with you next time here on the old program. So so there it is, kids. I'm done. I'm out of here. Me and Siri are going to have a serious conversation about some stuff. Y'all be sweet. We'll see you next time. Until then, take care of yourselves and take care of one another. For God's sake, stop shooting each other. I'm Rick Cheddar, and this has been from Radioland.
Rick Cheddar from Radioland is produced by Pirate Radio Studios Incorporated, Memphis, Tennessee. All music performed during this episode was used by permission. No part of this program can be rebroadcast or used in any other way except by written consent. For bookings and other inquiries, you can write the show by sending an email to radioland@pirateradiostudios.com. For more, go to radio-memphis.com.